Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Tech Doctor podcast. This is Robert, the Tech Doctor. And as always, along with Allison Hartley, and I don't need to ask you how you're doing, Allison, because I know that 2 days ago you got a brand new iPhone 5S.
I did, and a joyous iOS slash new iPhone week to you.
And you as well. And that obviously means you're doing well.
I am very well indeed.
We are going to spend some time at the end of the podcast talking about the new iPhone 5S and probably a little bit more about what the hardware is like and what it was like to get one and now what it's like to use one. But before we do that, we are very excited to have with us a man who's very well known around the access technology world who has just last week published a brand new book all about iOS 7, and it's particularly designed for those of us who use iOS 7 with VoiceOver. His name, of course, is Jonathan Mosen, and Jonathan, welcome to the Tech Doctor podcast, and thanks for getting up at 4 in the morning your time to
Yikes.
Be here.
Hey, Doctor, anything for you. No, it's good to be here.
Tell us a little bit about you and what you're doing these days for anyone who maybe isn't quite up to speed on Jonathan Mosen right now.
I'm running a company called Mosen Consulting, which obviously is my own business, and it's doing a bunch of stuff, actually. There's a new iOS-related business, which I'm not quite ready to launch yet, but it's getting very close, and I'm quite excited about that, and maybe we can talk about that on another podcast. I'm doing a lot of technology training one-on-one, some of that funded by agencies, because sometimes what you find is that agencies have a bit of an excess of work, or there's something particularly skilled that they need doing with a client over Skype, and so I'm working with some agencies to get that kind of thing done. I do a little bit of one-on-one individual funded training, and I'm producing a lot of webinars, ebooks, and related material, training material, and doing some general consultancy work as well. So it's kind of a mixed bag, and I enjoy that because it's not the same thing all the time. There's a lot of variation. And one of my most recent projects is the iOS 7 without the I book. So that's in a nutshell what I'm up to these days.
iOS 7 without the I is what we're going to spend most of our time talking about today. But as a person who's been in the access technology business for many years now, it seems like you would be in a perfect position to start this type of consulting business. Do you feel like somehow that 2013 is a good time to be doing this kind of work? I mean, it's kind of amazing for someone just to strike out on his or her own and say, I'm going to open my door here and make a living this way.
It's exciting. And it takes me back to my roots to some extent, because when I was doing Main Menu on ACB Radio, which I founded ACB Radio in 99 and we started Main Menu in 2000, one of the things I really enjoyed was trying to be as objective as possible about evaluating technology, reviewing it, telling people what's great about it, but also pointing out where there might be pitfalls. And what I find with technology, it's not uniquely a blindness thing by any means, it's a common problem everywhere, is that people tend to get quite territorial, almost partisan about their technology choices. And they get into this mode where they think that everything that the guys that they happen to have purchased does is great and wonderful. And anything that the other companies do that they're not on the board, on the bandwagon with, is not. And so I'm trying my best to be objective. Recently on my blog, for example, I wrote a post about Apple's Braille and how I think that they have not produced a product of appropriate quality there. But I'll also say where I think Apple has done well, and there are many, many areas where they have. So, yeah, it's a good time to be doing this for sure. With mainstream technologies becoming more aware of our needs, at least some of them, then it is a good time. There's so much happening.
I know Jonathan Mosen as a guy, at least in previous years, was primarily a Windows user, worked with the Windows screen readers and various Windows devices. And so it's a very pleasant thing to see you step into the Apple iOS arena. And it sounds like you have really come over. And according to what I read in the book, you're right. You are willing to point out the pros and cons as you see them. And I'm really glad you do that. But it sounds like you're pretty happy overall with Apple and iOS.
Overall, I'm very happy with Apple and iOS. I have a Mac, and in fact, I just updated from a 2012 MacBook Air to a 2013 MacBook Air.
Nice.
And I do run JAWS and Windows on that in Fusion because, again, I think that we have so many issues out there with unemployment, trying to have people understand that technology does make us very capable and employable. I don't think we can afford to say, all right, I'm exclusively an Apple person or whatever. I think we need to say, look, I'm going to equip myself with as many tools as I can to get the job done. And so there are many tasks that, in my view, just work better in Windows. And, for example, when I'm doing serious word processing and a number of other things, tools like the Text Analyzer and JAWS, where you can do some really seriously cool proofing, there's just no other screen reader that comes close to giving me that degree of ability to proof my document and make sure it's absolutely perfect. Nothing else on any platform can do what JAWS can do for serious vocational requirements. But I do like the ability to be able to iMessage people and FaceTime and do some other tasks. I blog using Mars Edit on my Mac. So I use what I believe is going to get me the best job possible done.
Yeah, that's a good point. We need to be as flexible as we can and use whatever tools will get the job done. I still use a BrailleSense U2 a lot, as well as a BrailleSense On Hand. And some would say that the dedicated note-taking devices are obsolete and out of date and going away. But those devices, just like you're talking about Windows and JAWS, have their strengths as well. So if we're fortunate enough to have the technology that we need, it's, in my opinion, I agree with you, it's best to be flexible if we can. So I think you're right about that.
Yeah, and as I said in my blog, at the moment, Apple just is not there with its Braille. There are some very serious flaws, and I am concerned about the fact that clearly in iOS 7, Apple is pushing the education market. They've put support for Nemeth in there, which is wonderful because they obviously know that there's a market out there. But until they fix their back translation issues, Apple is not ready for the classroom for blind kids. And so I agree with you right now, the note taker still has its place. And I'm not necessarily gleeful about that because I think there are all sorts of benefits to people if you can take something like an iPad with a Braille display and get it in the classroom, because you can then update the iPad on a more regular basis than it costs to update an entire note taker. The money, which is pretty thin on the ground these days, cash-strapped agencies, will go around more because an iPad and a Braille display is a cheaper option. But what concerns me is that kids will be forced to use this cheaper option because those who hold the purse strings don't appreciate that Apple has not delivered yet in terms of appropriate quality Braille, and they are not ready to replace the note taker at this point.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. And I read your blog post and also read some of the arguments pro and con to what you were saying on at least one of the email lists that I subscribe to. And it's interesting to read people's opinions about it. And one thing that I'm most happy about it all is that people like yourself and others are talking about Braille. We have done several podcasts this year on the need to bring Braille back into the forefront and make it available to our kids, especially because as blind people, we need to be literate. We need to know how to punctuate and spell. And without Braille, we just don't get that kind of information the way we need to. So it's really great that it's being talked about. And I hope Apple will step up to the plate and do more for their refreshable Braille. Well, I guess we'll see what happens.
Yep.
Yeah, I hope so. And I hope that we can put the case constructively. It is quite hard to dialogue with Apple. You know, one of the things that I really do appreciate about Android and what's happening there is that you can go on the Eyes Free email list and they'll release a beta of TalkBack there or BrailleBack, and you can actually have some dialogue with the developers of those products there. You know who the key people are. They're listening. You can install the beta. You can say, look, this feature works okay, but it might be better if you did it this way. And maybe they'll listen and maybe they won't. But at least you know that they are taking on board the things that you're saying. That's the kind of culture that we're used to in the blind community. And whatever your screen reader of choice is on the Windows platform in the blind community, you know who the key people are. You know that if you've got a real beef WindowWise, you can go to talk to Doug, or you can talk to Eric if you've got an issue with Jaws. You know who those people are if you're remotely tuned in to access technology. That kind of relationship does not, for the vast majority of people, exist in the case of Apple, and they're a little bit isolated, and I think they're starting to pay a price for that now. You know, you've got hundreds of thousands of developers, maybe more, testing iOS 7, and a tiny fraction of those are blind or voiceover users, because for many people, finding the money to pay $99 a year for the privilege of testing voiceover just isn't an option. And what you find is that some of the bugs in iOS 7 that are specifically blindness related kind of get lost in the shuffle, I think, of all of the other things that are, that they're contending with a really big refactoring of the OS. So it maybe that's just the way things are now, because Apple is a mainstream technology company and our needs and priorities must be pretty low down there. But if Apple is going to, should we say, you know, push assistive technology companies out of the way, then we've got to keep working on dialogue with them. You see this in a number of other categories. The iCloud keychain, which isn't in iOS 7 yet but is coming, yeah, that threatens other apps like 1Password and similar products. And you see Apple coming in and kind of squeezing out a particular category of products by building it into the operating system themselves. Since they've done that with screen reading, and we're all thankful for it, we just have to hope that there is ongoing dialogue between the blind community and them about really critical issues like Braille.
Yes, I agree. The dialogue is critical, and we need to do our part, and they need to do their part. I have had the experience, for the most part, of Apple accessibility. I feel like, even though you don't necessarily always get a lot of response from them, I've always felt listened to and have seen changes come about because people, I am willing to write them and discuss things. And so even if Apple doesn't respond quite the way, you know, Doug Joffrey does at GW Micro, it's still very worthwhile and very necessary to continue writing those feedback emails to them.
The fact of the matter is that we're paying customers just like anyone else.
You're both right. They do respond. And for example, one of the features, I'm sure other people suggested it too, but a couple of years ago when I was using the iPhone, I just had this idea and I wrote to them and I said, you know, as someone with a hearing impairment, when I'm in a crowded environment, I would find it incredibly helpful if I could have the phonetic pronunciation of a character spoken immediately rather than having to press a key, wait for the character name, and then a pause, and then the phonetic equivalent. Because when I'm in a remotely noisy environment, if I'm out on the bus or something like that, and I'm wearing hearing aids, and I'm really having difficulty distinguishing between V and B and D and stuff like that, and I would just like to hear the character right away in phonetic form. Well, lo and behold, it's turned up in iOS 7. So, I mean, they absolutely do listen, and you're right. Sometimes I wish they were a little bit more forthcoming. For example, the business I'm working on launching quite soon, I would really like to know, and I've seen this come up on Apple Viz and other places, I'd really like to know how many blind people they think are using VoiceOver. And Apple publishes all sorts of data every quarter. You know, they have these financial conference calls, and they get on, and they tell you how many units they've sold. And the analysts crunch the numbers and say, oh, that's a good quarter or that's a bad quarter. But they are quite forthcoming about, because they have to be for shareholders, about how many units they've sold, that sort of thing. I think Apple probably do know roughly how many people have VoiceOver activated. I suspect that that data is being sent back in some way. And yet they will not say how many people they think are running VoiceOver. We got this data from the Department of the Treasury, I think, a couple of years ago in the States, that said around about 100,000 blind Americans could be using iPhones, but I've not been able to find out where they got that, where they picked that number from. So when you're trying to do, when you're trying to advocate to app developers or whatever about, you know, that they care about the bottom line, if we had more specifics about how many blind people are using VoiceOver, it might be an easier case to make.
You're right. And there's always been, ever since Apple opened its doors in the mid-1970s, there's always been a reality that Apple is a company that is into secrecy. And that's one of the ways that they have built their business. It's not quite as true today as it used to be, but it's still true that they really like that element of surprise. And I think that whole culture is just part of Apple, the way that Apple is. And maybe it will change to some extent, maybe it won't. But it's definitely part of the culture from the very beginning. So it's very interesting to think about.
And I quite like that in some ways. I mean, I kind of feel these days like the iPhone launches are a little bit like your big sister's already told you what you're getting for Christmas to kind of annoy you. Yeah. Because there's no surprise anymore, really, that the leaks are so abundant that you pretty much know what's under the tree before the big day, you know. And it's kind of sad because it's taken that excitement away of waking up on launch day and really being surprised by something.
I think it's really largely because their supply chain has gotten so large that they can't control things leaking from manufacturing plants in China. It's just too big now.
Yeah, and in this age of social media, everybody's a global publisher, so it's not possible to maintain it the way it used to be.
Well, why did you decide to do an iOS 7 book? What was the thinking behind writing something like this?
When I started Mosin Consulting, I did a bit of informal polling of people, because I've done a lot of audio-related technology things, even before Main Menu I was doing them. I used to have a website that hardly anybody remembers anymore, and gosh, not quite before Alison was born, but pretty close, called The Arena. And that was a website in real audio back in the mid-1990s, about 95 or so. And, you know, in those days, it was my goal, and I was able to succeed for a wee while, to chronicle, have a link to every site on the web that did streaming audio. It seems ridiculous, but you could do it then. And so I was doing technology things even back then. But I also like to write. I've done a lot of writing in my career and various other things, not so much technology, but other areas. I've done a lot of writing, mainly in political things, really. And so I asked people, do you prefer to get an audio demo when you're learning something, or do you prefer to have a book where something's in front of you and you can refer to it? And I got mixed feedback about that. Some people are audio learners. Other people prefer to have a reference. And the thing is, I thought, well, there are some great podcasts that come out when a new version of something like iOS is released. And a lot of them are well done. There's a huge variation in quality with podcasts. Sometimes people just sit down with a iPhone or whatever and turn the recorder on, and whatever comes out, and they don't make an effort to edit or clean it up or sort of really think about their audience. And incidentally, I have a webinar on that subject called Record Tech Demos Like a Pro, which you can still buy, and takes you through the process of doing a top quality technology demonstration in audio. So I thought, okay, that market is covered, but wouldn't it be great, you know, if you could have a book that was specifically about iOS 7 from a blindness perspective? Because as I was reading all of the blogs during the beta period of iOS 7, they were all really fixated with the way iOS looks different. And because I was using iOS 7 as a on my developer account, I realized actually the functionality changes were getting lost in all the noise about the way that the thing looks. And there was a lot of functionality changes, but from a blindness perspective, the fact that it looked different didn't really change the fundamentals of the way we operated. And I thought, we really need a resource where people can just pick it up and read from cover to cover what's new from a blindness perspective. I thought, well, I'll do this. Will people be willing to pay for it when there are so many free podcasts and things out there? We will see. And man, I've been absolutely overwhelmed with how successful the book has been. There clearly is a lot of demand for a book like that. And so far, it's been 100% positive feedback about the quality of the book.
Excellent. And it is a very well done book, in my opinion. I read it the first time in Braille on my Braille device, and then I read it the second time using the EPUB version in iBooks. And iBook version is really nice because you have a very nice table of contents that lets you easily jump to whatever part of the book. And you were detailed enough in that table of contents that it's easy to use the book as a reference. So you can jump to a specific area. If you want to know what you found to be bugs with VoiceOver in iOS, you can jump right there. Or if you want to know how to operate the new notification center. You can jump right there. And so in that sense, it's not only an easy book to read, but it's a nice reference to keep in your device when you forget and want to look back at it at some point.
Because I haven't really put together an EPUB book before, but I realized quite close to launch that I really needed to try and get this sorted out, because you're right. I think people will read it from cover to cover for the most part, but then once they've done that, they want to jump back later when something comes up. Maybe they're running iTunes radio for the first time and they just want to jump to that chapter or a specific reference to something in that chapter. And so you double tap the table of contents button when you're reading this in iBooks. And yes, it's designed specifically to be like an executive summary of the book, so you can just refresh your memory. So when I finally got the EPUB working with all the hyperlinks and everything the way it wants it, well, I wanted, I'll tell you what, I earned myself a big dollop of cookies and cream ice cream for that one.
Yes, you definitely deserve that, because my experience has been that the table of contents works very well, and that's been a downfall of some EPUB books that I've used, is the table of contents doesn't live up to really getting you where you're trying to go. So
yeah.
Kudos on that. I think you did a really nice job with that. The other thing I really like about the book is that some of the chapters are a bit longer if they need to be, but some of them are really quite short. And so what I liked was you said what needed to be said without overdoing it or underdoing it, I thought. And that's really what people need. I think that's why people can really grab onto this book and make good use of it without feeling like they've overburdened themselves or that they've taken too much time with it. So I thought there's a really nice balance there.
You don't want to just string out a chapter for the sake of it. And at first I thought, haven't I got anything more to say? For example, the Spotlight Search chapter is only really one page. It talks about how you now work with Spotlight Search. But I thought, well, you know, I've said what there needs to be said. Let's not kind of string it out for the sake of it. But what's interesting too about this book that I didn't expect, and this is the nature of Twitter, I've been mentioning it on Twitter, telling people how to get the book, that kind of thing. And a producer of our most popular nationwide current affairs show here in New Zealand, where I'm based, picked up on this. And so I got the chance to go on national radio here in New Zealand and talk for 15 minutes to a mainstream audience about how it's possible for blind people to use a wide range of technology. And that was a chance that I hadn't anticipated, but I hope that it may be opened the eyes of some potential employers to just how capable blind people can be. So that was an unexpected bonus.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Allison, what's your take on the book?
I had the privilege of being able to look over one of the final drafts because I was also beta testing iOS 7, and I love it. Jonathan, I think one of the best qualities of your writing is your ability to be concise and explain things quickly, but also to inject a little bit of humor, and that's really present throughout the entire book. And as a beta tester, it's nice to go back and reread about certain features, especially if I'm going to be talking to someone else about them or showing somebody how to use them.
Yeah, and I really appreciate your help, Allison, and the help of a number of other people who tested the book or read the book, because it was a really interesting process doing this. I'm writing another book, which is about to come out on Twitter, and that was quite a bit easier in some ways because there's a lot of documentation out there. But with iOS 7, there wasn't obviously any official documentation available during the testing process. And so we all had to kind of play, you know, try different gestures to see if they did anything. I could not believe when I was just playing around with iOS when I first got iOS 7, and I did a four-finger double tap and help came on. I thought, holy soup, Apple, a four-finger double tap for help. It's, you know, I mean, a new user is going to find it pretty hard, I think, to do a four-finger double tap. But and then there was the three-finger quadruple tap, which surprised me.
I still have problems
more
with that one sometimes.
You can quadruple tap with three fingers now. So it's fun kind of just beating up on these gestures and different keyboard commands and seeing what they do. But no matter how thorough you think you are, you've missed something, you know, that's inevitable. And so having people who are kind enough to give up their time for really no more than maybe a free copy of the book and a thank you and the acknowledgements, and even then a lot of people who tested the book paid for it, which was kind. I really do appreciate that, because this certainly is a collaborative effort, and without the readers, the proofreaders, it wouldn't have been as good a book as it turned out to be. So it's great.
You published the book on iOS launch day, and then you almost immediately came out with some sort of update to the book?
Yeah, and there'll be more updates because there are one or two things that I missed. I wanted to, you know, I was waiting for iOS 7 to come out because I knew that there was bound to be something, at least one thing that I missed. And the one thing that I felt was really important because I was pretty scathing about it, so I wanted to be at least correctly scathing, was to describe the impact of turning automatic Braille translation to off. And one thing that I had missed in my initial writing was the ability to dump the buffer in the automatic Braille translation by pressing a .45 chord, which does make it a little bit easier in some respects to insert characters into the middle of a word. So I felt that it was really important for the record to get that out there and not misinform people about that command.
So it's nice to be in a situation, it sounds like, where you can be quite agile in updating and getting those updates out pretty quickly, even though it's a self-published book. It sounds like you're able to do that pretty easily and pretty quickly.
Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the reasons where people say to me, why don't you distribute this through the Kindle store or the iBook store? And I'll certainly consider doing that with other things because it's much easier to protect your intellectual property that way because there's digital rights management protection in Kindle books and iBooks. And obviously I'm relying on the decency and goodwill of people with this particular book. But there are two reasons why I didn't use those methods. One is because of the cost. Apple and Amazon take about 30%, I think, respectively, of all revenue, which means that I would not have been able to offer the introductory pre-order price that I was doing because that was insanely low. And the other reason is the agility thing. I knew that there was bound to be something that I missed, and I wanted to be able to get it out there quickly. Being totally in charge of my own distribution channel means that I can, you know, update a book anytime I want and get the update out there.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about the book kind of globally, but can you just go through a little bit for people who may be interested in getting a hold of the book? Can you go through a little bit of kind of what's in the book? What can a person expect to get from the book with regard to iOS 7? I mean, does it cover it from beginning to end, or what? How much is there?
The book assumes some knowledge of the iPhone, and I've had a few people who've said to me, "I'm thinking about getting an iPhone, or I have just got one now that in the States and other markets the 5S and 5C are out, and shall I buy your book?" And I've actually said to them, "No, don't buy the book because it's not really for you. I don't want to sell you something that you're not going to get value from." If you are a new user to the iPhone, I highly recommend Anna Dresner and Dean Martineau's book, Getting Started with the iPhone, which is just fantastic, and it's a great resource. This book really assumes that you've been using an iDevice to some extent already, but that you either have or are about to upgrade to iOS 7. So it talks about the actual upgrading process first, and this is also useful not just if you intend upgrading to iOS 7, but also if you intend upgrading to a new iDevice, because a lot of people don't realize that there are certain ways to back up that actually safeguard more of your information, passwords and that kind of thing. And so we go through the very best way to back up and restore. Not all backup and restores are created equal, so we go into that in some depth. And then we talk about voiceover features. There's an entire chapter, which is quite long, on voiceover and what's new in iOS 7. Talking about things like the new way that you can have multiple premium quality voices, the onboard help, the new handwriting feature. I'm really interested, actually. I did not anticipate that the handwriting feature would be the feature in iOS 7 that seems to have gotten blind people most excited. So that was quite interesting. And it just goes to show how Apple can do these things that really take off that you don't expect. So they do have their finger on the pulse for sure. Then we go through features of iOS that are not blindness specific, but we cover them from a blindness perspective. For example, the way that you interact with the control center and notification center is different as a blind person. We use voiceover gestures when we're describing how to do things. We talk about iTunes Radio, the app switcher has changed a lot in terms of the way that you close apps. And so we cover that. And so we move through all of the new features in iOS 7 pretty much, but we cover them purely from a voiceover perspective. And so hopefully that reduces the clutter. People don't have to go onto some blog somewhere that's written for a mainstream audience and try and translate, okay, how do I do this with VoiceOver, because it's all there in black and white telling them. And I think we ended up with about 15 or 16 chapters, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, having read the book prior to updating to iOS 7, I felt like I pretty much already knew how to access the notification center and the control center and how to bring down the spotlight search now that it's different in iOS 7. And so it was really nice to have that under my belt. I wasn't a beta tester, so it was nice to have that under my belt. And I felt like, you know, it made my getting up and running with iOS 7 very seamless. And so it sounds like that we're pretty much in agreement that probably the best audience for this book would be someone who's had some iOS experience and who is wanting to upgrade and get the very most out of their upgrade as quickly as possible. That's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, I certainly couldn't have done a better job than the job that Anna and Dean have already done with regard to getting started. That's a wonderful resource. So this was a very different market. And indeed, I'm just working with National Braille Press now on a contract with them where they will be producing the book in hard copy Braille and in e-Braille and also in DAISY format, in DAISY text format. So they'll be making it available in due course in those formats as well. And so that will complement the book by Anna and Dean that they already sell.
Well, good. That'll be nice that it will be available in those channels from National Braille Press that a lot of people are already familiar with. So it's nice that it'll be out that way.
Right.
I think that really, you know, it's exciting that you were able to pull this off and get the book published actually on launch day, because I think this probably where this book is most beneficial is right now while everyone's excited about iOS, everyone's trying to learn about it. It's really going to be interesting to see if, as people get a little more sophisticated with iOS 7, if as things mature, as we all learn things, it's going to be interesting to see if this book actually ends up taking on its own maturing process. And who knows how far that will go, but I imagine there's at least some thought in your mind of that you'll try to continue to update as new things come along.
Yes, and I certainly hope that there will be incremental improvements to iOS over the next year. One of the things that I've been a little bit troubled by is that VoiceOver updates tend to be fairly thin on the ground between major releases, but there clearly is some work to do in this instance, and I'm confident that some will be done. There are people reporting some pretty significant bugs, and hopefully Apple will have the resources to address those in forthcoming releases. And so certainly if Apple fixes something that is currently in the bugs section of the book, I definitely would want to publish another version and delete anything that's no longer relevant, because I want to be as fair as Apple as possible. And it's not fair having a book out there that describes a bug that no longer exists.
How do people go about getting the book if they want it?
You can head on over to my website at www.mosen.org. That's MOSEN.org. And if you do buy the book, which is $19.95 now at its regular price, I'd really encourage you to subscribe to the announcements only email list. It's extremely low traffic. I only ever use it when there is something to report, like a new webinar or ebook or an update to an ebook. And so when I release an update to iOS 7 without the I, I will send a message out to the announcements list to let people know that it's available and how you can get the update. So that's the best way. You can also follow me at Jonathan Mosen, just join it all together on Twitter, and I often post updates there about anything new that's going on as well.
Well, great. I really enjoyed this book, and I think it certainly met a need for me to get up and running quickly with iOS 7, and I think it will for a lot of people. And I've already heard, actually, just on the mailing list and so forth, of a lot of people having purchased the book and read the book. So it seems like it's off to a really great start, and I couldn't be happier about that.
It's phenomenal. And actually, Robert, you are like kind of my the audience I had in mind, you know, a busy professional who has important things to get on with, who wants to take advantage of the new technology that's out there. but who needs to get up to speed quickly in a professional capacity and may not necessarily have the time to go ferreting around for a bunch of different podcasts and sit through somebody demonstrating something at their pace. They're happy to pay a little for a resource that they can skim through at their own pace and get to what they need to quickly. So you are exactly the kind of use case that I had in mind when I developed the book, actually.
Excellent. And I really do encourage everyone to give this book careful consideration, because it isn't that expensive and it's got a load of good information in there. If you want to get up and running with iOS 7, it's certainly one good way to go about it. And yes, there are podcasts out there, but you have to sift through the information that's there to get these little tidbits. But the tidbits are all laid out right here in the book. So good job on that.
Thank you very much. It's been fun to do. And I feel like I've benefited from it in the sense that I think I could recite some of these new iOS 7 techniques in my sleep now.
Excellent. And certainly could recite some with the people that you're training and people that you're working with. So it does have that benefit for you.
Yeah, it does. Yes.
Anything else that you would like to leave us with about your thoughts regarding the book, iOS 7, just anything in general before we let you go and maybe get some sleep here, maybe 5 in the morning now?
Yeah, it's heading that way. I think iOS 7 in general is actually quite a good release. It's more evolutionary than revolutionary, I think. I don't think there's any particular feature in iOS 7 that's got a huge hey wow factor for me. But I am, as I say, interested in how the handwriting thing has gone. I think for a lot of people, perhaps from an era where they used the Opticon, and did you use an Opticon,
yes,
Robert? Yeah, I did too. So, or for people who maybe have gone blind later in life and are very familiar with the shapes of print letters, that kind of thing, the handwriting thing has really captured people's imagination. So well done to Apple again for pulling off another revolutionary feature.
That really surprises me too. And I've heard a lot about it on mailing lists and other podcasts. People are just really excited about this handwriting thing and excited about the fact that you can write letters and it sort of acts like the item chooser where it will narrow down your search if you're searching for an app or things like that. So they've apparently implemented it really well. For me personally, I have very little interest in, I'll play with it, of course, to see how I like it, but I'm not interested in handwriting and it would take me a while to get up to speed. I would rather, I think, use something, some of the other tools that are out there, like InBraille, for example. But the great thing is Apple's given people choices and to each his or her own, right? I mean, it's great that people are excited about it.
Yeah, and it certainly, it interests me because I've been a product manager in the assistive technology industry for 10 years, and so I'm used to sifting through a bunch of ideas, and sometimes you get ideas that you put in a product and sometimes you don't, and it's all about opportunity cost. If you spend time working on one feature, you're not spending that time working on another, so you have to prioritize and think how many users are going to benefit from this. For Apple to have decided to devote some engineering resources to developing this handwriting thing is interesting to me. And I would never have thought that it would capture as much imagination and interest as it has. So, you know, good on for them. They got it right. It's really interesting.
Yeah. And I think they really came out with a surprise. At least I hadn't heard that it was going to be in there.
Yeah, people didn't, I mean, again, people didn't talk about that much before the release. And this is another thing that rages, isn't it? Is you can go on to technology blogs right after the Worldwide Developers Conference, and you can read all about most of what's coming up in iOS 7 if you want to. It seems like the blogs don't take the Apple NDA particularly seriously, where it says that, you know, what you're using is Apple, what do they call it, proprietary information, and that you're not to disclose it. And the blind community as a whole is pretty good about that.
Yes.
But a lot of the technology blogs are not. And it does make me wonder whether maybe the blind community is being a little bit precious and whether Apple can realistically expect there to be any degree of particular secrecy when millions of people are using the beta. And I struggle with this. There have been times when I've wanted to post on what's new, given that so many, you know, non-voiceover users pretty much have a very wide overview of what's in the thing long before it comes out. So, but no, as a rule, we've stayed loyal to the NDA, and so nobody really was talking about the handwriting.
Yep, I think it's best to stay loyal. I think it works better, and we get along better with Apple that way.
Yeah. Why don't they ping some of these technologies? I mean, you can go to 9to5Mac or All Things, and these are pretty prominently well-read sites, and Apple must know that these posts are out there. It's not that some sort of underground channel. These are really prominent tech blogs.
Exactly.
And yet it would appear that Apple doesn't ping them for it. So you have to wonder, does Apple really mind?
As someone who's too young to remember the Opticon, I've actually been kind of really enthralled by this idea of the handwriting feature. And maybe one of your future books should be a handwriting book.
Goodness, I'd need to reteach myself. I mean, I haven't thought about working. The only print letters I work with on a regular basis is signing my signature.
Right, me too.
So I was really surprised by how many people seem to really like the handwriting feature. That was just totally out of the blue for me.
I was listening to the Mac Accessibility podcast at 4 o'clock my time this morning. And, you know, it was interesting that it seemed like the people that were on that podcast that really loved the handwriting feature were people who had at some point had sight in their lives and had learned print. They thought it was just really a terrific way to enter some information on the screen. So I'm sure for that market, it's probably going to be very exciting. And maybe for some of us who have always been totally blind, maybe even will, you know, take the time to refresh our memory on some of the letters and give it a shot. Who knows how far it's going to go, but it sure is amazing to me how people are talking about it.
And of course, that is the majority of people. The majority of blind people are adventitiously blind. They've gone blind later in life for whatever reason. The vast majority of them, of course, are over the age of 60, and maybe Apple are thinking about that. But it's interesting how Apple has created technology that makes us think again about things that we thought we wouldn't be interested in. So I think there will be people who are looking at print letters once again. Of course, you can draw them on the screen and get feedback about what it is that you're drawing. But again, with photography, they've done that as well. I hadn't really ever had cause to play with a camera on my cell phone until I got the KNFB reader on my Nokia N82.
Right.
And then I started learning a little bit about the camera and how actually sometimes it's better to be further away from something you're photographing than close up to it so you can get the full picture and the view and all those kinds of... Cameras had not been on my radar at all. And so I learned a lot through that. And now we have even more improvements in iOS 7 with the camera where when you go through your photo albums, Apple is describing whether there are faces in the photo, whether the image is blurry or crisp and things like that. What they've done to make so many things that we thought we weren't interested in interesting. It's just phenomenal.
It is indeed. It's really fascinating. And that's one of the things I love about Apple. They're always surprising us, and it's always fun. Well, yeah. Jonathan, thank you so much for taking this time to come on and talk to us about the book. I really wish you the best of success with the new business, with the book, and we'll have to have you back sometime soon to learn about this new venture with iOS that you're not quite talking about yet, but
not quite. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's great to talk with you both. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I tune into the podcast quite regularly, and it was thanks to you that I decided to dabble and get the Nexus 7. So you're responsible for a slightly lighter wallet.
Excellent. Excellent. If we can help you spend your money, we're doing our job.
Yeah. Hey,
good on you.
All right.
And I will hang up so that you can talk about your 5S's and I don't have to drool because they're not available in this country yet.
Oh. Okay. Well, hopefully they will be soon because I think you're going to love it when you get it.
I am going to get it. And that's a slight update because I posted on my blog that, you know, here are the pros and here are the cons. And I'm not quite sure if I'm getting a 5S or not. But having read a couple of reviews and really, you know, there are certain apps where iOS 7 is just a little bit laggy now on my 4S. And also there are a few features creeping in that the 4S doesn't work with, like AirDrop. And I'm sure there'll be more in the next version. And so if I'm going to write more books like this, I decided that it's a justifiable business expense. So I'm going to run out and buy one when I can.
Well, if you're not getting a new iPhone once a year, you're not getting one often enough.
<That's right. laughs> Thank you both for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks a lot, Jonathan.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Really enjoyable to have Jonathan on the podcast and talk about such a great book that I thought was an easy read, packed full of good information, and it's nice that it's available, and I think people can get it easily and really get up to speed quickly on iOS 7. So that's a lot of fun.
Definitely.
Well, we have one more topic to discuss on the podcast today, and that's to share some of our experiences with the brand new iPhone 5S. And of course, it's very tied into iOS 7, since the 5S and 5C will only run iOS 7, or that's what comes installed on them. So I'm sure we'll be talking a bit about both. But how has it been for you? I know that you, I assume, got yours on maybe on launch day on Friday, the 20th of September as well.
I did. I got my space gray 64 gig iPhone 5S on launch day. Anybody who has been following me on Twitter is probably happy that I finally got it, because all I've been doing is whining about how I wanted the gold prior to getting the iPhone. But unfortunately, in California, there were no silver and no gold iPhones at any of the Verizon stores, or it sounded like, in fact, really anywhere in the state. The Los Angeles Verizon store, I believe, had only gotten 10 gold iPhones. So I'm glad to hear that they're ramping up production of it. But at the end of the day, I figure I'm totally blind. The color really should not matter that much to me. And in fact, now that I have the new iPhone 5S in my hands, it really doesn't.
Yeah, that's. I was sort of hoping for the gold too, but like you.
Yeah, I was being a material girl, but you know.
Yeah, exactly. But the color really didn't matter to me. I also got the 64 gig space gray. And it was a lot of fun. We sort of turned it into a family adventure, which was fun for us. I decided this time that I wanted to go to an Apple store instead of going to AT&T, which is my carrier. And I was thinking that probably there would be more of a selection at the Apple stores than what the carriers would have. And I think that was true to some extent, although not necessarily with the gold color. I think they were just in short supply everywhere.
Yeah.
But we went over to Austin, Texas, which is about 2 hours from us, which is also where my son lives, who's in school there. We went over there Thursday night, and we went over about 10 p.m. to check out the Apple store after we finished dinner, and there really wasn't a line. There were a few people hanging around, but no real line. So we decided, well, we'll come back at 6 in the morning. The store opened at 8, and we thought if we got there a couple hours early, that would likely be plenty of time. Well, when I got up around 4:30, quarter of 5, I already had push notifications from Rob Walsh, who does the Today in iOS podcast, saying that he had it on good authority that iPhones were in short supply and that it was going to be hard to get one, and that if you wanted one, you better get in line now. But we had agreed that that my son Graham would pick me up at the hotel at a little before 6. So we stuck to that plan. And unfortunately, along with that announcement from Rob Walsh, I got an announcement from my weather alert saying that expect flash flooding during the day. So we headed on over to the Apple store and got there around 6 a.m. and walked up there. And there were probably 300 people in line in front of us. So somehow during the night, a lot of people showed up at the Apple store, and we were very surprised about that. We didn't know what that would mean in terms of what we were able to get. We stood in line for maybe 45 minutes or so, and it was pleasant outside, and then it started to pour down rain.
Oh, no.
And we had one small umbrella to share among the two of us, and so we stood there as close as we could possibly get, having a good father-son bonding experience, and our front stayed pretty dry, and our backs got really wet. So we were pretty soaked by the time the store opened around 8 o'clock. Turned out that the Apple employees would come down the line with cards. They had one card for each phone that they had available. And they would ask you what you wanted, and if they had it in your carrier with the color that you wanted, they would give you a card. And that's how you knew whether you were going to be able to get a phone or not. And so we both got cards for the 64 gig space gray. So we knew at that point we were going to get a phone, but it was still about another hour and a half, I guess, before we actually got into the store. And then once we got into the store, there was yet another line in the store because it was just packed in there with people trying to get their new phone. So we stood in line for a while at the store and finally got to work with an Apple representative. And I decided I was going to trade in our phones because Apple is now partnering with a company to buy back your old phones and mm-hmm. give you a gift card, which you are allowed to apply toward the new phone. So we got up there, and I decided I was going to trade in my iPhone 5 and see what I could get for it and reduce the cost a little bit. So they typed in my serial number, and the message came back, this device is not recognized, or some message to that effect. And that's exactly what was the guy's response, like, what? I've never seen a message like this. And so he typed it in again, same thing. And so said, let me see if the server's down. So he typed in his own serial number from his iPhone 5, and it worked perfectly. He said, oh, it must be something about your phone. So to make a long story short, they got the managers involved and finally decided no one knew what was wrong, what to do about it. So they had to call the company that's actually doing this buyback program. And the company promptly said, we have no idea what's going on. It'll take us about 24 hours to figure it out probably. We'll call you back tomorrow. I was like, oh, man, this is so frustrating. And here it is on launch day, and I want my phone, right?
Yeah.
So finally another Apple employee walked up and said, let me type that in one more time. And he typed it in, and it went through perfectly that time.
Oh,
so,
man.
So who knows? So my son and I both ended up selling our phones back and getting a reasonable amount for them. Not a huge amount, but enough that it wouldn't have really been worth hanging on to them and trying to sell them on eBay or through Gazelle or something like that. So we were pretty satisfied with how that all worked out. We got the phones and finally we're out of there after, I guess probably having been there and in line for somewhere between 5 hours probably.
Oof.
So that's how long it took to actually get the phones on launch day, which was, to me it was worth it. For most people, it wouldn't be. My wife was thrilled that she could stay at the hotel and sleep in. she did not want to be a part of the great iPhone launch day. But did you have to wait in line, or did you have a similar experience?
I have to say, we had a pretty good, relatively quick experience at the Verizon store. Jeremy and I are maybe a 10-minute cab ride from our local Verizon store. We were kind of down to the wire in terms of time. We got there at about 7:45, and I was actually really nervous. I thought that for sure there was going to be a huge line, we were going to be super late for work, and it was just going to suck. But it turned out that there were only maybe about 6 people ahead of us in line, and they had that operation really coordinated at the Verizon store. Even before the doors opened, there were people getting our numbers and our information and finding out what we wanted. And we were able to just go right in at 8:00 and actually educate our salesperson about VoiceOver, which was pretty cool. And we just went through the process. We elected not to trade in our iPhones because we were going to be using the Verizon Edge program. And the down payment that we ended up paying was less than if we had traded in the iPhone and paid outright for the rest. So it ended up working out pretty well. And every year now, we'll be able to upgrade to the latest iPhone on the Verizon Edge program. So the whole thing didn't take very long. I was able to take the thing home, restore it, and get on with my day. And it was just a pretty smooth, fluid experience.
No problems at restoring or getting it up and running.
No, and absolutely no problems getting the awesome fingerprint sensor to work properly either.
Excellent.
It's very easy to set up.
That is one of the beautiful things about the Apple product. If you have a good backup, it really is easy to get it restored and back up and running almost identically to the way your earlier device was. It's pretty seamless these days.
Yeah, I had to enter in a couple of passwords, but other than that, it was really, really nice.
Yeah. For people, you know, upgrading, if you do a backup to your computer, to your Mac or your PC, and you do an encrypted backup, almost all, if not all, those passwords will and email account information will get restored.
And I should have done that, but I didn't.
Yeah, that does make it very seamless if you do it that way. But you can also restore from iCloud. It just takes longer.
Yeah.
So I had a not quite as seamless experience as you in terms of setting mine up. The fingerprint sensor has worked flawlessly for me. In fact, I've got 100% rate so far.
Me too.
Every time I unlock my phone, it unlocks immediately. It takes probably a second or less once you put your finger on the home button for it to unlock. It's really fast.
Yeah.
And the same is true for purchasing apps in the app store. You can have it set up so that you can use your fingerprint to do that, and you don't have to type your password anymore. And
it's already gotten me into a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very easy to spend your money now, very easy to buy apps. And for me, I have like a 14-character upper lowercase random number generated password for the Apple ID, and so it was really cumbersome to type in, not to mention the fact that you have to remember it. So mm-hmm. The fingerprint sensor is a huge advantage there, and I think we're only just seeing the very beginning of what this is really going to mean in terms of purchases and so forth.
But oh, yeah.
As always, Apple starts conservatively and makes sure that it all works right before they move too far down the road. But for me, it works great as a fingerprint sensor. I discovered that indeed no other finger in my family anyway is misrecognized as my finger. It seems very accurate and very secure.
Yeah, I tested it with some of my coworkers. I was like, try to unlock my phone, and it kept saying, try again.
Right.
I know it works.
Yeah, so it really works well. I think they've hit a home run with the fingerprint sensor. But where I ran into a problem, which is very bizarre indeed, was with the passcode part of it. In addition to having to scan your fingerprint, and the system has to do multiple scans on your finger to be able to recognize your fingerprint at different angles and so forth. Once that's fully voiceover accessible, and once that process is completed, then you have to enter a 4-digit passcode that you can also use to unlock your phone. And you have to enter this 4-digit passcode twice. And so I did that, but when I was done, somehow, and I'm just 99% sure, somehow this was user error that I must have misheard a number from VoiceOver or something. But for whatever reason, when I got done, the passcode that I thought I had entered was not the passcode that my phone thought I had entered.
Huh.
And so no matter what passcode I tried, it wouldn't let me in through the passcode, even though the fingerprint sensor was working fine. So mm-hmm. The phone and fingerprint sensor agreed on the passcode, but unfortunately, I didn't know what that was
for
whatever reason. So I thought, well, I'll just go and erase everything on my phone and restore it again. But you can't do that, because the whole point, at least part of the point here with this new security system, is so that a thief can't just get a phone and erase it and then sell it or do whatever he or she wants to with it. So mm-hmm. When you go to the section under settings, which says erase all data from this phone, the first thing it's going to ask you for is your passcode.
Mm-hmm.
And if you and your phone don't agree on what your passcode is, you're out of luck. And there's nothing that you can do other than take your phone to the Apple Store. And so I went back to the Apple Store, and it literally took the guy maybe 5-10 minutes to run some software on his MacBook that bypasses all that stuff and goes in and erases all the data from the phone and lets you then start from scratch again, which is what I did. And the second time through, the passcode entry worked flawlessly. And so I'm certain that it was somehow a combination of excitement of it being new, user error, maybe not hearing voiceover perfectly clearly. I don't think there's a problem. I think it was a bizarre set of things that happened that made it not, made me not know exactly what my passcode was the first time through. But it was a little bizarre, I will admit.
That sounds bizarre. I imagine you were using Compact Samantha.
Using Compact Samantha because I was just in the beginning of the setup process, and that made it probably a little harder to understand.
Yeah, I find that the Compact voices in general are not as intelligible. That's the one really kind of disappointing feature I've noticed in iOS 7. In an effort to switch to the Vocalizer Expressive voices, I really think they've sacrificed some quality in the Compact voices, and that's unfortunate because that's all you get when you first turn on the phone.
Right, that's what you have to work with until you get to a point where you can install the premium voices. But at any rate, so I would just encourage everyone, when you get the new 5S, just be super attentive and careful when you're setting up your passcode. Make sure that you enter the same code twice and that you and VoiceOver agree on the numbers that you have entered. It's not a problem. It's totally accessible and it works very well unless something bizarre happens like it did with me. And I don't think that will happen very often. And I really doubt that it was the system. I suspect it was a misunderstanding between me and VoiceOver. But once that problem was resolved, the passcode has worked flawlessly for me, and the fingerprint sensor always worked flawlessly. It's just that I kept trying passcodes because I wanted to get it to work somehow, because you need that passcode sometimes.
Yeah.
And so I tried it to the point where it eventually decided I was a thief and locked me out of my phone, and that's why I had to go to the Apple Store, because there was no way to get back into it after that. And it's good. I mean, it's designed that way so that people don't have incentive to steal these iPhones the way that they have been. So, I mean, I understand why they had to move in this direction. But I'm finding the 5S to be extremely responsive and to work really well with all the apps that I've tried it with, to work great with VoiceOver. I'm really not experiencing any problems at this point. These are early days, and so we have more testing and experimenting to do, but I'm very happy with it so far.
Me too. I've had a great experience so far. I use dictation pretty heavily, and I'm finding that with the 5S, dictation within edit fields is even faster than running the Gold Master of iOS 7 on my 5, and I think a lot of that has to do with the A7 processor.
Yes, they're talking about that iPhone 5S essentially being twice the speed of the iPhone 5. And I think we see some real benefits for that as VoiceOver users.
Definitely.
I think the 5S is a substantial upgrade even over the iPhone 5. And of course, a lot of people won't upgrade their 5 because of the 2-year contract limitations and all that. But if you have a 4S or a 5 and you can swing it, I definitely feel like the 5S is a worthwhile upgrade.
I agree.
So we are going to be talking more in future podcasts about iOS 7 and about the iPhone 5S, because only having had them for a couple days, we're just scratching the surface with them. But least want to take the time to share the stories of kind of getting going with them. It was a lot of fun at the Apple Store, actually. Maybe you have to be a little bit odd to want to go out there at 6 or before in the morning, but we had a nice time and enjoyed being there, enjoyed the people around us, everybody loving their iOS devices, and it was a fun thing to do. It was like a little adventure. So I couldn't be happier with mine at this point, and we'll be talking more about it in the future.
Definitely, I can't wait.
This is Robert, the Tech Doctor. I will just go ahead and say so long for now.
And this is Allison Hartley saying bye, everyone.